Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
Good evening, White Sox fans. It is Tuesday in your regular evening for us, as tomorrow evening is New Year's Eve. So as you've guessed, it is Tuesday, December the 30th, 2025. It will be our final show of the 2025 year here at Hot Takes and Heaters. My name is Danny Miller. The young gentleman that'll be with me tonight is my co-host, as always, Jacob Thome. How you doing, Jake?
Doing good. No complaints. A little bit weird doing this on a Wednesday, but or Tuesday. Would have been normal if it was a Wednesday, but yeah, always fun to be here.
Yeah. How was your Christmas, man?
It was good. Had a fun time with the family, and yeah.
Right on. You know, between my... my birthday on the 5th and Christmas just a few days ago, I have been showered with a ton of Bears merch. So, yeah, it's been a little weird, but we are here to talk about the White Sox tonight. So we're going to get into that on the agenda this evening. Man, the White Sox are continuing to stay active. So, you know, after the Murakami signing, White Sox went out and signed Sean Newcomb, which was a pleasant addition. And even as of late here, just in the last, 8 or 10 hours or so, it's come out that they are in on the MI sweepstakes as well. So we're going to get into that, as well as, you know, some other things, maybe a little bit of the Yoan Moncada rumors and things of that nature. But we've got a lot to talk about tonight. So if you're here and you're listening live, or if you're listening on the recorded show as well, stay tuned. There's going to be a lot to discuss. So let's go ahead and get into it. Obviously, you know, the Mune Muraki. Murakami signing was a big one last week, and we spent quite a bit of time talking about that last week. You know, we probably won't hit on it too much this week, but I'm sure it'll come up at some point. And then, of course, Sean Newcomb comes around. We'll get into him as well. The Amai thing is kind of crazy to me right now. But I think we'll save that till a little bit later in the show. So I want to just get the elephant that's in the room done and over with. Let's just get into the Yoan Moncada talk stuff for a little bit to kick off the show here. Because, you know, it's been a point of a lot of talk here in the last week or so. And, you know, I have my thoughts on it. But I want to start with you, Jake. What is your take on the White Sox being in on, you know, just it all on the Yoan Moncada situation?
Yeah, it makes no sense. to put it lightly, I mean, that there's no reason for them to make that move. The thing is, it came from Francis Romero, who's a very trusted reporter, especially in the baseball community, more known for some of the international stuff. Obviously, Yoan being Cuban, he's an international guy. I'm sure he has ties to Francis, but yeah, bizarre. I don't know what the plan is there. Maybe they're thinking him in a corner outfield spot. He struggled with injuries, as Yoan Moncada typically does, and can't play third base anymore. He was horrible at third base last year. So I'm not sure what the thought process is there. I'm sure there is one. They wouldn't just reach out for no reason. But I'm not really sure what that reason is. So I don't think it happens. It just doesn't make any sense to me, but we'll see.
Yeah, you know, here's my thought on this. Like, you know, so a lot of folks want to say that Yoan Moncada is a guy who, you know, kind of, you know, was serviceable enough to produce a little bit last year, right? But again, he wasn't completely healthy. And if we're going to talk about, like, serviceable production, his numbers didn't exactly jump off the page, right? I mean, it's difficult to even think that there might be a spot on this White Sox roster for him at the MLB level. Now, when you bring up Francis Romero, he is a guy who's known for being a respectable source, but that's not to say that he's always right. You know, he has had some missteps in the past where there's been times where I, you know, take something that he said and I want to run with it. And it turns out that it wasn't necessarily in line with what other experts and other people were talking about, and never really came to fruition. So as much as I respect him, which I do, it's not to say he's infallible, right? So my thing is if the White Sox are in on him, I'm going to guess that it's probably not from a standpoint of like a major league contract, which I don't think he's going to accept a minor league deal. There's just not a spot for him on this ball club. I know that you're mentioning that there might be a, you know, or an outfield position available. There's so many better options out there than taking a guy who typically been over the third baseman and has had back and hamstring problems, and you want to run him around the outfield. Like, that just doesn't sound like something that would make any sort of sense for the White Sox whatsoever. And now you've got a handful of guys who can play third base, whether it be, you know, Vargas, whether it be Meade. You've got other infielders that you can kind of move around a little bit here and there. You know, Chase Mydroth can even play a little bit of third base. We've seen him do it in the past. And, you know, if Mune Murataki isn't, you know, hacking it at first base, that is, third base is his typical position, right? So it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And then the other thing is, you know, James Beegan is a pretty well-respected guy in the White Sox, you know, realm of the world, where, you know, obviously he's not with the Athletic anymore, which is a shame because, you know, I feel like they lost a good one there. But he still has his ear to the ground. He's still got sources out there. And I did happen to see a clip from the Sox Machine podcast with him and P. Knowles. And, you know, he came out and said that from what he's hearing, the chances of them being really in on it is next to none, but not none, right? It's not zero. So I take it with a grain of salt, but it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me for this ball club, especially when we're talking about, you know, Chris Getz wanting to turn over the last regime and kind of start from, you know, his own building grounds, you know, a foundation that's pretty much all his, you know, Luis Robert aside. But, you know, it's been one of those things where it's like, why even bother with a guy who's oft injured and really doesn't have a position unless you're talking about minor league depth? And I just don't see him taking a minor league contract. Go ahead, Jake. I'm sorry.
No, you're good. You're good. Yeah, I don't know. Like, is there a want by Yoan to be a minor leaguer? I don't know. I don't know if he's got a major league potential. Like, I don't know where his fit is. I don't know what his market is. He, you know, a guy who you stash on the bench? I don't know. I mean, some of the hitting numbers weren't horrible last year, but he couldn't stay healthy. I believe he was injured in the first series against the Sox. and that kept him out for a while. So yeah, just a bizarre report that's came out, but yeah, we'll kind of see what happens here. But it's not a guy I'm expecting the Sox to take a look at.
Yeah, you know, and it's a thing. I think what's probably going to happen more than anything is if the White Sox are just kind of maybe checking in, and that's that next to zero, you know, chance that it happens. I think it's more of a just watch his market, right? If a major league club market develops for him, I can pretty much guarantee the White Sox are going to be out. And yeah, I won't 100% guarantee it, but it just doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And, you know, what do I know? I'm just a dude sitting here doing a podcast in my family room in the Southwest Burbs. But, you know, you got to put two and two together. And I think if that major league market doesn't materialize for him, then there's a chance they say, okay, you know, we'll sign you. We'll throw you in Charlotte. We'll see what happens. But that's not to say there isn't a handful of guys in Charlotte who are vying for those positions as well, too. And if he can't stay healthy, I don't know if that really helps the ball club at all. So I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. Cool. I don't think I have anything else to add to that.
Right on. So we'll just go ahead and move on then. Sean Newcomb is the latest name to be signed by the White Sox in a MLB capacity. And it's been talked about a lot in the last, you know, 4 or 5 days since that's happened. And I want to get your idea on Newcomb, because it's been reported that the White Sox may view him as a potential starter for this ball club. And I'm just kind of curious as to what's going through your mind on whether or not you believe that, how you feel about the signing in general, and if you were to put on your GM hat and put yourself in Chris Kessler's shoes, and even more so, Will Venable's shoes, where do you see Sean Newcomb fitting in this ball club?
Yeah, I think he can start. I don't know if he will. I just think that, you know, with the other, I don't know. I mean, part of it means that, like, yeah, they're going to have to add another piece to this rotation, I think, between, as I like to call them, the Three Stooges and Martin, Burke, and Cannon, and then whatever else you get. I mean, obviously, Kay and Shane Smith are there, and then you got to figure out who's going to break camp. And obviously there's a big name free agent they're potentially looking after. There've also been rumored to be in on other free agents as well. I don't think Newcomb's a starter. He's made a couple of like spot starts. Maybe he's an opener type of guy for them, but I think you're looking at him as either your closer or a left-handed setup man. I'm shocked that it was this cheap considering some of the, how we've seen some of the trade market stuff look. For left-handed relievers, but yeah, good signing for the Sox, and they need as much help in that bullpen as they can get it. But I think it's a pretty solid bullpen group now. I don't know. There's maybe another move made, but I would expect that Newcomb's the big signing there.
Yeah, and I'm kind of feeling the same way. The thing about Newcomb is you know, he has been a starter in the past, right? And his success kind of varied. He had a certain level of consistency that just wasn't there as a starter, right? One of those guys that you looked at and you go, man, he's got all the potential in the world. Comes out one game and is absolutely lights out, and then, you know, has a clunker. And I think this White Sox team is probably looking for more consistency than that right now. But what this Sean Newcomb signing does for this White Sox ball club is we look at it. We've talked about this ad nauseum for the last probably 6 months or so now, about how the White Sox have a ton of guys coming back from TJ, right? And a lot of these guys are expected to, if not crack the MLB lineup at the beginning of the season, straight out of camp, are expected to be part of the MLB ball club at some point during next season. And what the Sean Newcomb thing does is it offers them a little bit of flexibility there. If you do need a guy to, you know, like you said, be an opener, maybe have a spot start here and there. Sure, I can see that. I just don't see him as a full-time rotation piece, in my opinion. And his numbers as a reliever are far and away better than they are as a starter, as you know, his level of consistency is anyway. Having a lefty, another lefty out of your bullpen never hurts. You know, we would like to see another lefty in the starting rotation, to be honest with you, but we have guys coming. And I think that the rumors are just that, you know, maybe there's somebody in the White Sox organization that's leaking these things like, hey, we see him as this, we see him as that. But their track record doesn't suggest that kind of thing. I think it's more of a Band-Aid for what is potentially going to be a rotation that's going to need some innings to be eaten, right? So, you know, I take it with a grain of salt, but again, I could be wrong. It's just, to me, if I'm wearing my Chris Getz hat, he's going to be probably a more solid back end of the bullpen piece. I don't foresee him being an everyday closer, but I could see him being your setup man, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I closer is going to be a weird spot. I mean, they have a couple of arms that I think that could make things interesting. And yeah, I mean, as James mentions, like, the bullpen's really interesting right now. I did kind of a 26.
And I'm actually glad James brought that up, because this was going to be part of my next topic on this. But go ahead.
No, I put out like a 26 man, like, kind of roster projection, and that bullpen's weird. Like, there's a lot of guys, and obviously they're going to need a ton of guys to get through the season. That's just how it works out. But it'll be interesting to see who makes that initial 26.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing is the bullpen now looks way more solid than it did to me last year. Even coming out of camp, right? And we're only in the end of December as of right now. You know, the crazy thing is just a few weeks ago when the White Sox were winning the draft lottery and, you know, other things were happening, we were pretty excited about all the stuff that was going on before they even signed Murakami. And I said, you know, this might be the most exciting time that we have this offseason. I will happily say that I have egg on my face, and I was completely wrong. What Chris Getz has been doing this offseason and this front office, I mean, we're hiring coaches that are going to, you know, it seemingly be a huge piece of what's to come in the future. The development team seems to be coming together. You've got guys like Murakami coming in and Sean Newcomb coming in, and now the reports of the being in on Amai. This is a different feel for the White Sox, right? I want to call it the new look White Sox. And Chris Getz has had his fingerprint, his thumb on the White Sox since taking over, but now I feel like he's really kind of pushing that thumb down and like, hey, this is my White Sox. This is my regime. This is my turn as GM now coming to fruition. We saw the trades. We've seen them, you know, the moves. We've seen the pieces that we think can be brought in for cheap, i.e. Eric Fetty and others that can be brought in for cheap and flipped at the deadline. What we're seeing this offseason in this hour is like Chris Getz is really taking the reins and saying, this is the direction of the White Sox. We are no longer going to be even somewhat associated to old regimes, like the Kenny Williams and the Rick Hahn regimes, where, you know, we thought we knew what an offseason was going to look like. Chris Getz is like, you know what? Screw that. This is what offseasons are going to look like from now on. We're going to be involved. We're going to go out. We're going to do things. We're going to spend the money that we have available to us in ways that are going to make this ball club better. They're going to take risks, obviously. You know, Murakami is a risk. But it's a risk that has a reward if he reaches his ceiling. Or even, you know, above what we think might be average for him. Same thing with Amai. I think, and we'll get into the Amai thing here in a little bit, but the real thing is I mean, I was kind of tough on him in the beginning. And I have been tough on, you know, Brooks Boyer and the marketing team. Like, I will happily say that I maybe have been wrong about Brooks as well, too. I will take back some of the things I say, because now we're talking about Brooks kind of going out there. And you know, the story is that there's marketing to this ball club by taking these guys and marketing them to other parts of the world. And there may be money involved in that and getting, you know, overseas TV contracts or more merchandise sold. And here's the other part of this. If they do happen to sign Amai, now you've got two guys out of the MPB this year, right? And the thing we know about guys that come out of the MPB is that their fans travel well. So it might actually put more butts in the seats. You know, if we look at, we go back to like the days of Fukudome. I think Fukudome played like 20 some odd games for the White Sox in the last year of his MLB career. But we look at it, his time when he was with the Cubs and, you know, the year that he spent with the Indians or wherever it was. He had, and you know, he didn't have like jump off the page numbers, but he had a following. And that's why I bring him up over, you know, some of the other players. Like, I'm not talking about the Yamamotos and the Imaganas and the Shohei Ohtanes. I'm talking about a guy who doesn't have maybe the biggest name out there, right? But they still had people that followed them. They still put butts in the seats. They still sold jerseys. They sold merchandise. I think this is just a really good new feel for what this White Sox team is trying to do. And I think Chris Getz is just showing you like, hey, I'm going to start swinging. What do you think?
Yeah. Amai is an interesting one. He's another guy that I think, like, I don't know to the level of Murakami, but I think there's some risk involved in his game. The biggest difference I think with Murakami is, like, you know, there's not the age. Murakami's only 25. I think Amai is 28. So I don't know, like, on a 2-year deal, he's coming back out at 30, which, I mean, there's still interest there, I think, but who knows? Amai would be huge. I mean, there's no sugarcoating it. I don't know what that deal would look like. I don't know if he, I don't know what the length would be. You know, the thing that scares me is there is almost confirmed reports now that the Yankees and Phillies are also involved. Phillies, obviously,
it's crazy because just as early as this morning, I heard the Yankees were like next to pretty much already done.
See, like, they were in,
but they weren't. What's that?
I thought the Cubs were like locked in to get him. I thought for certain he was going to be a Cub. But now the Yankees and the Phillies are out there. But then, you know, Yahoo Japan comes out and like, White Sox are the front runners. And it's like, well, that's interesting because there's been interest there. And James brings up a great point here. Boris Klein. Like, Boris and Reinsdorf do not like each other. Reinsdorf doesn't have a lot of friends in the baseball community, and Boris is certainly not one of them.
I have an argument for that, but go ahead.
It's either Ishbia talking or, well, like with Murakami, it was a little bit easier. For one, his manager was a former White Sox. For two, he had the same representation as Benintendi. That worked for them. This seems like a jump. Like, you're having to convince Amai on what you're doing. It's reported that Amai thinks that the Murakami deal is a positive and that helps him, which is great. There were some, he put out some interesting quotes. I'm trying to remember some of them, but, he's, certainly an opinionated guy, which, nothing like negative or anything, just, has put out quite a bit of context that I think, we'll see. I think they have a chance. I don't think they're the favorite. I would be shocked if I shouldn't say I don't expect it to happen, but I necessarily wouldn't be shocked if it does happen.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. So I also had the immediate thought of this guy's a Boris client, right? And thank you to James for bringing that up in our chat. We appreciate it. But word on the street just recently is like the $100 million, $150 million market may not be materializing as originally thought. Now, obviously, he's not going to get like, you know, Yoshinobu Yamamoto money where he's coming in and getting like 12 years, $320 million right out. It's just not going to happen, right? But his numbers are solid. He is 27 years old, so he's a little bit older than some of the other guys that are coming across the pond. But in that time, especially in the last 2 years, he has redeveloped his arsenal. He's worked on, because he had an awful walk rate, right? Awful, like insane, well above 10%. I think it was like 13, 14% at one point, which is, it's just ridiculous. In the last two seasons, he's reworked his pitching. He's worked on his control, changed his arm slot slightly. He's actually out of a lower arm slot than he was before. He's considered a low arm slot now. But the crazy thing about it is this dude throws smoke.
Yeah.
He throws smoke. His average, his pitch average is like 95. MLB starter pitch average right now, velocity average, was 94.1 last season. So he's almost a full mile an hour above. Now, that might have something to do with the fact that he throws his fastball more than anything. And his secondary pitch against righties is a slider. And he's a two-pitch pitcher when he's thrown against righties. Now, when it's lefties, he's going to throw a lot more junk. And he's got some movement to his other pitches. But the problem is the slider doesn't have a huge amount of break. But he's used it well as a strikeout pitch when he's throwing that heat, right? So his thing is it translates to the MLB, which is fantastic. And the White Sox need that. But as far as a starter is concerned, and you look at the Cubs, I don't know that the Cubs are going to want to spend that money. Like, they've talked about not wanting to go over $200 million. The last couple of seasons, it's been a big thing. Their fans have been furious, and maybe that's their front office listening to that and saying, maybe we should make a move. We didn't make a move at last deadline when we thought, you know, we were going to just go ahead and roll through the playoffs and the way they started out. And Cubs fans were absolutely hot about that. I mean, they were really steaming under the collar, right? But I don't know. Unless something happens there, I don't know that they're going to do it. They've taken a new direction these last couple of years, and maybe they're changing that up. I don't know. They do say they want another frontline starter. But if the market doesn't materialize the way Imai wants it to, I think Boris might start to drop that number a little bit. And if the White Sox can get themselves on a, instead of a five-year deal, maybe a three-year deal, much like Murakami's, like, hey, we get you on a two- or three-year deal. You come over here, you prove it, you can get your payday. You might get that $300 million contract if you come over here and do things the way we think you can, right? So I don't know. There's something there. I would like to see. I think there is a chance. I think there's more of a chance than most people think there is, or giving it, because again, everybody wants to point out he's a Boris client. Everybody wants to point out that the White Sox have not given out the $100 million contract yet. I don't know if they have to. I think this is lining up the same way Murakami signing lines up, my personal opinion.
Yeah. I will say this. I don't think the Sox are giving him $100 million. I don't think that's what's in line here. I would assume it's a 2 year, three. My guess would be two for like 55-ish or for 80.
Yeah, I'm thinking three for like 75, 80 is kind of my thought.
Yeah, that was the range I was in, which still wouldn't break the record. Shout out legendary Andrew Benintendi. But he was 75. So, yeah, I guess it would. I was thinking it was 85. Anyway, back onto the track. But, like, Yeah, I mean, this would be huge. I mean, it would be a huge signing. The Sox need another frontline starter. There's also been some interesting reports around Shane Smith that I don't think are true, but I've mentioned that the Sox could potentially trade him this offseason. Again, don't want it to happen, but if they want to make a move for a bat, which I've said that they could do, looking at you, Jaron Duran, he's a name I've kind of brought up. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, they certainly need another starter. Like, there's holes in this rotation. Like, if they bring in Amai, they don't have to trade Shaden Smith. That's not what I'm trying to get to. But, yeah, he would be huge. I mean, he would kind of plug in right as your number two. You'd have Smith, Amai, then Kay. And then four and five is either going to be, you know, Burke, Cannon, Martin, or any of the prospects. And so, plus all these guys you have coming back from Tommy John, things could get interesting pretty quickly. In that rotation, as someone brings up trading, I mean, yeah, like Kai Bush then becomes tradable, like Drew Thorpe probably becomes tradable. There's some interesting things you could do.
Yeah, yeah, there absolutely is. So the other thing that Amai has said is, and this gives me pause, but I think there's probably room for translation in this as well too, is he said he didn't want to go, and this is the whole reason why it seems like the Dodgers are out, is because the Dodgers have a bunch of Japanese players already, and he said he did not want to be part of a ball club that had other Japanese players on it. I think that's where the, you know, somebody mentioned in the chat that he wanted to be the main star in a team, and I think that's where the translation kind of comes into play, is I don't know if he wants to be the absolute main star. He could be a pillar of, if he comes to the White Sox, he could easily be top of the rotation guy here. If his numbers, and they usually do, you know, with all the tracking data that we have nowadays, when it comes to pitching, numbers translate pretty well across the pond. And then, you know, obviously the White Sox are known for being able to develop pitchers and fix pitchers and help pitchers out. And, you know, they've grown leaps and bounds in the last couple of years in their tech. So the thing about him not wanting to play with other Japanese players, or not wanting to not be a pillar of said team, whichever team it is that he goes to, I think that comes down to him just wanting to be, you know, number one. He doesn't want to go to a team with Shohei Ohtani on it, right? He wants to go somewhere where he's going to be recognized. He doesn't want to be in Shohei Ohtani's shadow. Number two, I think a lot of folks misunderstood. Like, they're talking about, oh, well, you know, I don't – Murakami's already here. Like, he doesn't want to play on a team with another Japanese player. He wants to be the only Japanese player. Well, Murakami's not established here. So I think that kind of changes things up there as well too. So I think the idea of him coming here is not as far-fetched as a lot of people think. It just depends on how they're pitching it and how they structure this deal. I don't believe the Yankees are in as much as they're being said to be in, because they've already got a ton of pitchers and they've got more on the way coming up through their system. They would have to make room. So I don't really know. Same thing with the Cubs. The Cubs have a pretty solid starting rotation, and I know they want one more. They've been saying it all season, they want one more. I just don't know that this is the way. And they get a couple of guys back here at the beginning of the season as well too, and now maybe they're looking at it from the standpoint of, well, we might need the help, we don't know who these guys are going to be coming back from injury, and you know, you can never have too much pitching. I'll go with that all day every day. I say that about every team at the beginning of the year. So I don't know. I think it's an interesting subject to talk about. I would really love to see where it goes, but the fact that the White Sox are even in and being talked about as one of the front runners right now is maybe the more shocking part of it. And again, I think that just signals that we're now entering a different era of how the White Sox approach the next few years and becoming a team that can possibly contend not only for the Central, but, you know, go into the playoffs and be competitive beyond the first round. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and another thing that, like, and I was going to say this on the podcast before Murakami signed, but like it explains why the Sox haven't signed anybody. That I mean, obviously they bring a newcomer, but like I think we're all expecting another potential starting pitcher and definitely a right fielder. There will be a right fielder out of the seam. I would bet quite a few dollars on it. So I think that
Stockman.
Yeah, that's my guess. But no, but I mean, like when you start to really look at it, I mean, it makes sense for both teams. I will say this was an interesting in my quote. So he says, and this is translated. It seems that teams showing interest and teams actually making a formal offer are two completely different things. This is from him. I'm sure the circumstances also change when teams sign free agents other than me. With that in mind, I want to make the best decision with my family in mind too. So that screams like, who is not making an offer? Like, who's showing interest in not making an offer? Cubs kind of makes sense for that. Yankees kind of makes sense for that. So, like, and this kind of, I think, happened with Murakami. It's like, Sox just made an offer, and nobody else made an offer. And at the end of the day, he went with the Sox. So, like, my guess is that the Sox have an offer in. An actual official offer. And we'll see what other teams do. But, yeah, that'd be my guess in terms of why the reporting came out now is that the Sox do have an offer in. And, again, we'll just kind of see what that looks like. But, yeah, some certainly to watch here. Like you said, I don't think they're out of it at all.
Feeling sluggish from all the extra food, drinks, and celebrations? Kick off the new year with a science-backed reset. Quicksilver Scientific's PushCatch Liver Detox is a patented, simple two-step system that supports your liver, gut, and whole body detoxification, helping clear out what's slowing you down so you feel energized for the year ahead. It's more than a cleanse. Quicksilver Scientific's PushCatch Liver Detox helps reset your system. Get 10% off and free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. Again, that's tryqs.com/podcast for 10% off and free shipping. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Graham laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Graham keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit LGUSA.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Graham laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
And I wonder if that opens up some more money if they want to go. I mean, like, if Amaya's going to get 25 mil, like, you can get a – there's really good starting pitchers available that aren't Amaya. And I understand, like, Amaya's, you know, kind of this buy low, sell high dream for them. But, like, there's a bunch of really good starting pitchers that are – currently available. Like, I don't know what the Framber market looks like. I don't think they're shooting that high. But I didn't want to pull some of these guys up.
Please do.
Yeah. Like Gallon's available, I think, or did he go back on his, like, Ranger doesn't make a ton of sense.
No, I had a list and now I'm Zach Gallen's definitely one of the ones that I particularly think would be a great fit here.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out some of these guys. Like, but I think the market's interesting enough where you could add a decent number two starter for kind of the range that they're in. So I don't know what that – I don't know what the rest of the free agency is going to look like if they don't get a Mai. Because clearly there's some sort of money to spend. I don't know if they're debt guarantees or trading Robert. I don't know. It's not my money. I'm not going to worry about it. But, yeah, certainly an interesting offseason so far for the Sox.
Yeah, and, you know, you talk about and I'm glad you brought this up because I kind of had the same thought. Like, in order for anybody to be saying that the White Sox are in on this, is I feel like there is an offer out there. This is not just a, hey, you know, we're throwing our hat in the ring, we want to talk to him. The reports are that interested teams are meeting with him in L.A. this week. So I would guess that means the White Sox have a representative in L.A. First and foremost, before even talking about, you know, an offer being out there. I think that means that there is somebody there. And, you know, I haven't heard about who and what that means. But if the White Sox have somebody there, that doesn't mean, like, hey, we're just checking in. That's more than just checking in, right? Like, you're actually meeting with his team. And part of that team, obviously, is going to be Scott Boras, which everybody keeps bringing up. What gets me about this is if the idea that there's a contract already being offered, that kind of takes the whole he's a Scott Boras client argument out of the conversation, doesn't it? Like, it doesn't mean the Sox are unwilling to work with Scott Boras. Obviously, they have worked with Scott Boras because we've drafted guys who he represented. And I get it that, you know, when you talk about drafting being on rookie contracts, the negotiations there are a lot more forgiving for a team like the White Sox, who don't like to have dealings with Scott Boras or his agency. But the fact is it doesn't mean they're not going to work with Scott Boras at all, right? Because they do have somewhat of a relationship there already. It's not like they don't have any Scott Boras clients. I think it just comes down to the fact that if the market develops for him and it goes beyond what the White Sox are willing to pay, then so be it. But the White Sox have to feel like they are at least capable of making a significant enough offer to at least draw some interest from him and his team, because they wouldn't send somebody to LA if they didn't feel that way.
And I mean, the Sox do have Boras clients like Robert's a Boras client. I don't know when Boras took,
I knew this.
Me and James are on the same, wavelength here, but
again, though, like, he was an international free agent that the White Sox brought
over. Right, but like, I mean, they have worked on an extension. Like, Robert was extended to a certain degree, so like, there has to be some. I don't know. I don't know if Ishbia, like, if that changes stuff. I have no idea. No clue. This is kind of a new offseason. We kind of talk about this, you know, unfortunately, in August, you started looking ahead, and you're like, all right, what's the offseason going to look like? We kind of talked about, like, hey, maybe they're going to spend some money. Maybe Ishbia gets involved. And this certainly seems like Ishbia getting involved. I just don't think Jerry's opening the pocketbooks for this. And there's been talks because every kind of non-spending owner has opened up pocketbooks that, like, potentially next year's lockout and needing to get to the salary floor has opened every owner up to spending a little bit, looking at you, Pittsburgh. And so maybe that's part of it, and that it is actually Jerry spending. I'm not sure. Obviously, wish I knew what Jerry was thinking, but I unfortunately do not. So, I'm interested to see kind of how this goes forward.
All right. So that's an interesting subject, and I'm going to switch gears just off of what you just said right there, because I want to talk about this a little bit. You know, obviously, the lockout looms, right? It's foregone conclusion. But when you talk about teams that are not typically willing to spend, and we're seeing a little bit more of that happening right now, and it's actually those teams that are not willing to spend which are driving the offseason right now, because it is outside of a couple of these smaller market or teams that operate like smaller market, i.e. White Sox, you know, I feel like it's been a pretty slow moving market so far, that we have not seen the ginormous deal. We haven't. There's still a handful of some of the highest. And again, it's not the best free agent class this year, right? But there are still a handful of guys who can be considered maybe not top tier players, but larger contract type players that are not moving. It's not been the fastest moving free agent market. And we see these smaller teams making moves to maybe get ahead of the market, and instead of waiting for, you know, the dominoes to drop. I get that. But does this also kind of signal something about the lockout coming up here after next season? Maybe not being one that's going to last as long as originally predicted. Are the smaller market teams and the smaller spending teams prepping for making concessions to the Players Association and hoping that this thing doesn't drag out for as long as it could. Do you see any reason to think that?
Yeah, either that or they're not going to go for a salary floor and the owners are just trying to be like, hey, we spent, look, we're not bad people. We spent a lot of money. We're going to continue to do that. And then they're going to create a new CBA and stop spending. That's kind of the other side of it for me. But I'm very intrigued by this lockout because it seems like both sides are on two different planets.
Reports are true.
I don't know how many owners are going to go for a salary floor. I don't think any part of the Players Association is going to go for a salary cap. There are other issues that are mild or wildly far on. So, this could be an extensive lockout. I would really enjoy this baseball season while you can. I'm not saying there's going to be a lockout that extends into the season, but I wouldn't be surprised if that were the case.
Yeah, and again, I'm not trying to say that there's not going to be a work stoppage, right? I wholeheartedly believe there is. I just wonder if this is, and obviously, this way too early to even try to put a finger on the pulse of this situation. I just thought that, maybe it just shows that potentially the teams that are typically known for trying to put the block on the Players Association and really kind of hold that line are the teams that typically spend less, and the ownership of those teams is known for doing that. And Jerry Reinsdorf is at the head of the class on that one. But I don't know. There's a handful of owners out there spending money right now that you don't typically see them spend. And it just, maybe I'm reading into it a little bit too much. And we'll see how the rest of the offseason goes. But it gives me these, and I really need to make sure that I am very clear about this. It is the tiniest, the smallest sliver, the smallest inkling of hope that when that work stoppage comes, it's not going to be super extended. It's not going to be, 4 months into the ball club or into the season. It's not going to get into July or August where we're like, at this point we might as well just cancel the rest of the season or have a repeat of a 2020 season where it's like, 55, 60 games. That's not going to be good for baseball. That was only 5 years ago. As we sit right now, baseball can't survive a work stoppage every 5, 6, 7 years. It can't. They lose. And now we're in an era where they're trying to gain younger viewers, and they're struggling to do that. They're struggling to do it. The growth inside in our own country here in the U.S. has been slower than any other era. So obviously going to these other markets outside, and we're doing these games in Tokyo every year, and we're going overseas to play a handful of series in Mexico City and wherever it is that they're sending, these ball clubs to play a handful of games. Part of that is to grow your viewership and your following, right? Work stoppage is not conducive of that kind of thing. So I don't know if this is them kind of just saying, hey, like you said, we're spending the money. We're not that bad. We're not awful owners. Or is it just like, we can't survive a long lockout, so let's do what we can now to avoid as much of that as possible. I don't know.
Yeah, 21-22, that lockout kind of felt like kicking the can down the road, and not a whole lot was solved. And so I don't know, I really don't know what that looks like. It's kind of been an underrated story of the offseason, but it will be the story of the offseason next year. And it certainly is going to be I just don't know. These things typically get ugly in baseball, very ugly. And poor Bob Nightingale is going to have to sit, on on CBA Watch for whatever it was last time. It was like a week. I don't know what's going to look like, but yeah, I mean, like you mentioned, I mean, and James, who obviously works for in one of the other podcasts, he was, you know, he's big on there's not going to be a lot of work stoppage, and he's like, can't afford it. And I kind of agree with him, like, baseball can't afford it. And I know you just kind of made that point too. Like,
are you talking about Fegan?
No, Fox.
Oh, our Fox,
yeah,
our James, yes,
yeah, our James. He's been very adamant. There will not be any missed games.
There shouldn't be. The baseball can't. Baseball cannot survive.
And the issue with like baseball is like it's a very short off season compared to everything else, because like spring training starts in like
six, 7 weeks. Yeah, we're like 6, 7 weeks out now.
And it was ended what 7-ish weeks ago, like. There's only 12 weeks to kind of negotiate this thing in the offseason, because players are going to need some sort of time period to get warmed back up.
Well, so, and then the other thing is like GMs are and owners are sitting at this table doing this negotiating. What does that do for the free agent class at that particular time? And we saw this before. It kind of sits stagnant. Early on in that last time, the last lockout we had early on, it was like the first couple of weeks. There were some big moves and then nothing until we got close to, you know, spring training being done. And there was a handful of guys. And it was obvious that that handful of guys that got signed right at the end were not themselves to come out. And here we are. You're doling out these giant contracts to guys, and they're not able to perform. Pardon me. I just spit on myself.
Danny can't contain himself.
But I mean, they're unable to perform the first few months of their contract at levels that they're normally typically, you know, performing at, because they're just not ready. You know, you can work out all you want in the off season. There's a difference between, you know, practicing and actually getting into, you know, spring training games and real competition, you know? Right. So I don't know. It's just not, it doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. And you know, here's the other thing I do want to point out. Jamie Lewis says owners are getting smarter on those 10 to 13 year contracts for players who stink for the last 5 to 6 years. RIP Anthony Rendon.
I was going to bring him up.
Go ahead, man. What do you want to talk about?
Well, Jamie also mentioned that they have WBC next year. No, WBC starts here like remarkably soon. It's in like a month. It's this year. Shout out Munetaka Murakami, who will be participating. I don't know. I was going to put together the list of every White Sox player participating. I don't know if Robert's participating for Cuba. I don't know what the lingo is there, but I know he did. I think he did last time. I don't know.
I mean, yeah, I guess would be competing. The way Jamie worded it, I guess he's
technically
not wrong.
Next year. Yes,
it is technically next year, but next year is like the day after tomorrow. So
right. It's been a month.
All right. Yeah, we have a super chat from Emiliano. Thanks for checking in with us, Emiliano. We always appreciate the support. He says Tatsuya Amai is no Roki. There's levels to his, what is it? To his,
add an IT behind the H.
There's levels to this. Yeah, I gotcha. I was just a little slow on that. I apologize. I mean, you know, there is definitely levels to it. But
what was Roki's contract?
That's a good question. Why don't
he got that weird contract because was an international free agent.
Yeah, Roki Sasaki.
He wasn't like a big, he was like pool money. So they're, oh, thank you, Ian. So like Roki is not compared. Yes, Roki is a better player. Roki is like, I would say if you were to sign Roki in this posting era, he's probably a $200 million guy. Whereas like Amai is probably $100 million. So yes, Amai is a lot better, but Roki's a lot better, but Amai, I think you can get on a discount.
So real quick, I want to just point out the reason, Jacob, for all of you listening to the recorded stuff, it doesn't see us here on the screen. Ian checked in and said, Robert said that until they change the way they run Team Cuba, he won't play for them. So it sounds like he's out on the WBC. And then to just go back to Emiliano's question here, I want to preface. Actually, I don't even want to do that. I want to say this. I don't know if there's really a comparison to Roki and Amai. And I think it's just because they're two different pitchers altogether. Amai is a guy who I think the only reason he doesn't get the larger contract is because, one, he's had a history of injuries. He's never started more than like 25 games in a season, ever. But in 24 starts last year, he had under a 2 ERA. And I know a lot of folks will say that, well, yeah, you know, the arms and the bats in the MPP don't exactly line up, right? But again, I brought it up earlier in the show. What we do know is with all of the tech and all of the numbers, and we can do the comparisons, and we have a history of pitchers coming over now where we see how things translate. The one thing I'll say about Amai is his numbers look like they translate over here, and he has made changes that have been major improvements over the last two seasons. So the big thing on him is he doesn't have a long track record, but he does have a trend that shows the changes that he has made have worked out immensely for him, going from a near 5 ERA a few years ago down to below a 2 ERA this past season. So, and not only that, his strikeout rate went from 13% down to, or I'm sorry, his walk rate went 13% down to 7%, and his in-zone strikeouts are through the roof. And he's now up to over, he's almost 10 strikeouts per nine. I think it's like nine, maybe he's over nine. I don't remember the exact number, but he's over nine strikeouts per nine. And is only walking guys at a 7% clip, which is, I mean, it's not something to scoff at. You know, is it going to be top in the league? Absolutely not. But it might be one of the better, you know, walk rates in the White Sox staff right now.
Yeah.
It could end up topping out the White Sox staff right now. So he's not something to scoff at. I think the reason he's not getting the money is there's the injury history and not having a long-term history of success. But there is a trend. So I hope I answered that question. I don't know.
Yeah. Mine's fun, man. I think as long as the fastball gets enough whiff and he can command it, he'll be as a good pitcher. That's like kind of what it comes down to. If the fastball stops missing bats once it comes over here, or he can't control it, you're in trouble. But if it works, you're good. The velocity's there. Everything's there. See, here's the thing with Sasaki, though. Like, so Roki, obviously, I think started the year as a starter. And then I think he went to, Tulsa as a starter and then came back as a bullpen piece. Like, I wonder if there's bullpen in a Mize game if he doesn't work as a starter. Like, could he be a closer with the fastball ranging to, 99, 100? Is there closer potential? I don't know. Like,
I could see it, but if you're paying a guy 22 to 25 mil.
Right. It'd be if he doesn't work as a starter.
It's going to be tough to I'm just saying it's going to be tough to justify. Like, yeah, okay, he's under contract. We got to do something to make him and earn his money. But you get a $25 million closer. Oof. I mean, that's – you know what I'm saying? He's got to be Edwin Diaz.
Right.
Or better.
That's higher mark. No, I mean, I get it. It's just like
– as long as he doesn't come out to Timmy Trumpet, I'm fine.
Not a big fan of Timmy Trumpet. What?
I hate it. I absolutely think it's ridiculous, but I know I'm the outlier on that one. I know a lot of people love it.
I know you hated Gavin Sheets' walk-up song.
Why are we bringing up freaking cement boots today? I really was hoping Gavin Sheets would do something It's unfortunate that he had to move out to the outfield, but, you know, it is what it is. I was a fan. Maybe not the biggest fan, but I was a fan. I like Gavin.
Anyway. That's what happens in the offseason. You get talking about random White Sox players. Sometimes a Matt Davidson gets thrown into this thing. So, did you have any more thoughts on anything? Weird ending of the show. Bizarre ending of the show.
Yeah, Timmy Trumpet and Gavin Sheets. Sure. Yeah, let's go ahead and ask everybody that's in the chat. Since Emiliano went ahead and throw his out there, he says his walk-up song in high school was Late Night Tip by 3-6 Mafia, which I think is outstanding because that beat alone, and if you have not had an opportunity to it, there is a college marching band that does, I think it's like their French horn section or something. There's a horn section that does it, and they get this bass out of it. Look it up on YouTube if you get an opportunity. I wish I could remember what it was. But, yeah, that band, it's wild, dude, to hear them play it in the stands. I mean, you're going to feel like if you put your headphones on and listen to that, your body's vibrating. So that's a good one, Emiliano. But let's go ahead and ask the chat. If you guys had a walk-up song, and I'll even ask the question twice. What's your walk-up song if you're a hitter, and what's your walk-up song if you're a closer? And let's start with you, Jacob Thome.
That's a good question. So I like for one, I'm a huge fan of playing into the location that you're playing in. Like,
so would you switch it up if you were on the road, or is that what you're saying? Or are you just talking about
the you don't get your home team songs? Yeah, right. You don't get.
Oh, walk-up you're right. You don't. You're right. You're right. My bad. I don't know what the hell.
So, I was thinking there. My draw uses No Problem by Chance the Rapper. So, like, that I think is cool. I think it depends on, like, where you're from. And then if you're, like, for one, and I don't know if this isn't maybe a direct answer, but, like, I hate all the walk-up songs that are, like, very, like, non-aggressive. Like, not non-aggressive, but, like, very, like, soft. I don't know how to explain it, but, like, stop playing, like, I don't know, just like, I'm trying to think of like a good example of one. I can't think of one right now. Like Jordan Leisure's walk-up song Out of the Pen is Let It All Work Out by Lil Wayne. Great song, horrible walk-up song, because like it's very like quiet and it's very like not like pump up at all. It's horrible. Love the song, great song, horrible walk-up song.
So what's yours? Hate to put you on the spot, man.
Pitching would be Right Now by Van Halen. I'm trying to think of the
Right Now as a closer. I'd do that.
Right? Those kidding? Oh, Public Service Announcement by Jay-Z. There it is.
Okay.
That would be
all right. So I'm gonna throw it out there that and I know it's been done before, but I like it. I wouldn't be the first one to do it. Ian, before I give mine up there, I'm going to, Ian says, Your Love by the Outfield. That's interesting. I think you get a few chuckles out of that one. I is my walk-up song. Would be Living Color. Why am I drawing a blank right now? It's the chat's got me going. I'm looking at all these other things. Cult of Personality. Sorry. I think that riff is just, it's a good pumper upper. And you know, if you want to talk about like staying local, there was a wrestler out of Chicago that used that as his entrance music, which I'm not a big wrestling guy, but you know, you could probably guess who that guy is. You a wrestling guy, Jake?
No.
Chicago guy?
Oh, I can see his face. See, I have a name, but I'm going to say the wrong name, and then I'm going to get roasted in the chat, so I'm not going to say the name. And you'll say the name, and I'll just be like, all right, I was right.
Yeah, I'm drawing a blank, too. That's why I'm asking you.
Was it CM Punk? Is that the
right? Yes, thank you.
Okay, I'm right. All right, cool.
That is it.
Cool.
Yeah, so that would be my walk-up music as a hitter. As a closing pitcher with the lights going all crazy, you know, they've got that new, well, it's not so much new anymore. It's been around a few years now, but you know, the whole spotlight thing going nuts and the crowd cheering as you come up out of the bullpen and make your way to the mound, would be, God, I'm going to draw a blank again. Give me a second here. It is gone. It's gone. And it's been my,
I'm sure, like, I know.
Oh, Bro Him by Pennywise. And if you don't know it, look it up. I would do like the main chorus, or at least like the first verse going into the main chorus, because it would be one of those ones where you get the whole stadium. If you've never heard it, there's a part in the song that's just oh oh oh. If you can get a whole stadium of people doing that while you're coming to the mound, just shaking and rocking, I think it would be so intimidating to the opposing team. Like, I'm coming in to close out this game and I'm gonna swing my big dingling when I come out here and do it.
I will say, I want to give a shout out. So I do D2 baseball. Layla by Eric Clapton. That's not the band name, but that's who sings it. That was a common one. That was a really good one. And also, there's a girl on the softball team. I can't remember her last name, but her first name was Sophia. And she used the Sophia the First, like, theme song. Fantastic walk-up song. Absolutely fantastic walk-up song. Enjoyed that one very much.
Yeah, Kevin Euclid, he did use What I Like About You, and it did go pretty hard. It was awesome. It would get the fans moving, the stands kind of bumping a little bit. And then, you know, some friends of mine and I were talking, probably, I want to say around Thanksgiving. Might have actually been Thanksgiving when we all got together for Friendsgiving. And I made the joke. I thought it would be pretty funny if you, like, have you ever, you're way too young for this, but maybe you've heard of it. Have you ever heard of the TV show The Greatest American Hero?
Nope.
Okay, I am going to give you a homework assignment. When we get done here, you're going to go on YouTube and you're going to look up the Greatest American Hero theme song. And that, I thought, would be a funny, either way, walk-up song or, you know, a come-out song for the closer. So if you guys are listening, go check that out if you don't know what I'm talking about. You might get a good laugh out of it, and that's about it, so. But yeah, man, I think unless you got something else, that's probably a pretty good spot to close it up. I almost wish I had a soundbite for that Great American Hero. We could just use it as our outro tonight.
Yeah, don't. Unfortunate.
All right.
I'm out of ideas. The think tank is empty.
Hot takes and haters, real quick.
Oh, think tank's got to roll one more.
All right, I'll give you mine. I'm going to go ahead and I'm gonna rescind any kind of bad juju that I've put out there, you know, and I may have been hypercritical at times throughout the last few years. It's tough being a White Sox fan and going through multiple rebuilds back to back and not really seeing the success we had hoped for. And, you know, as a fan who likes to tailgate and do some things, and I may have been a little hard on Brooks Boyer over the last couple of years, and I will take it back. You know, I know he's not the one making the final decision on a lot of these things, but I also know he's had his inputs, and it turns out, you know, I'm sure I've been told that he's a really nice guy in life, and I have not had the opportunity to talk to him more than a few seconds. He probably wouldn't even know who I was, you know, if given the opportunity, because, like I said, the one time we did meet, it wasn't much. But I'll take it back. I like a lot of things that have happened the last couple of years. As far as fan experience at the stadium that he's been involved in. And I do like the fact that reports are coming out now that he's getting involved in international free agent signings and what that marketing could do for the ball club overall as a whole. So that's, I guess, my heater.
Kirk Skoyarner heater. I'm going with the same hot take that I've gone with the last 2 weeks because I keep texting the group chat that it's working. White Sox signed somebody this week.
Oh, I was going to tell you to do it. But I was like, no, it's not fair if I tell you and remind you.
Nope.
Right on.
It's been like the day after, too. If Amai signs tomorrow, I have something here. I have something here. If Amai signs tomorrow, Kyle Tucker's a White Sox.
Emiliano says he'll be at Sox Fest signing autographs.
Autographs aren't allowed.
I will not be at Sox Fest, at least as of yet. I don't know if something comes along the lines. Maybe I will. I will be at the after party. For the 108 guys do an after party every year. For the years that there was no Sox Fest, they just did what they called 108 Day, and that's always a good time. So I've already got my ticket purchased for that. So, yeah, if you guys have not been to one, it's a great time. If you're not going to Sox Fest, if you are going to Sox Fest, swing by. It's not too far away from the Remova Theater where Sox Fest is happening. It's going to be at Reggie's, I believe. Again, I probably should have gotten that information when I bought the ticket, but I've purchased my ticket. It's always a good time to hang out with all Sox fans. So, Gary, Indiana.
Yeah. Or no? Those are poorly timed and bad joke.
Are we doing like the Bears thing now? Like moving? Was that where that came from?
No, that came from like where was the least desirable place I would want a ticket to be for a show that like kind of made sense for Chicago. That was the thought of the joke.
And yeah, I don't think I would be driving all that way if I was planning on drinking, which I am, by the way, because it is a 108 event. So
yeah,
I don't know. If I don't make it out to Sox Fest, so you guys want to come hang out, you can find me there on the Saturday of that weekend. I would be happy to sit and enjoy an adult sparkling beverage or a libation, and we'll have a good time. So
I'll be 2.5 hours away in Central Illinois.
Oh yeah, good old Taylorsville.
Darn tootin'.
All right, there you go. Well, it has been a pleasure chatting with all of you tonight. Jacob, as always, awesome hanging out. Really appreciate all your input. Chat, you guys are always the best. You guys are out there just throwing stuff at us and keeping us on our toes, and we appreciate you. If you've not already done so, and I see there's a lot more people in the room than there is likes on this stream. So if you're hanging out, go ahead and hit that like button, subscribe. We will appreciate it. To our super chatters, man, the support is always welcome and much, much appreciated. I know we're on a weird night tonight as it is a Tuesday, but we will be returning to our regularly scheduled Wednesday, probably next week. So you guys can come check us out next Wednesday at 8 PM. For all of our other shows, just hit that subscribe button. You'll find us. If you're not following us on Twitter @X, go do that at Future Sox. Check out our website, futuresox.net. You'll find all our written content there. Behind a paywall, you can find our exclusive stuff. We also have a handful of other shows here that you can find on YouTube and the Purple app, as well as on all your podcast services after they have gone from live to recorded. Again, we appreciate all you guys. We are now officially, we have gone live with our merch. So you should check that out. You can find that on our website as well as, let me just double check and make sure I got this right. You can find that on Fourth Wall as well. So awesome stuff. We got some pretty good hoodies and long sleeve t-shirts out there right now, including some Under Armour stuff. So good quality. Anywho, it's been fun. We'll see you next week.
Rest in peace, Zach.
For my co-host, Jacob Thome, at J Thome 21. I am Danny Miller at Danny Miller FS on X/Twitter. This has been Future Sox Hot Takes and Heaters, part of the Just Baseball Media Network. Till next time, we love you guys, and as always, go White Sox.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.